Welcome to the Irwin Markets Project.
This is Irwin Markets, Professor Emeritus of History, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Russian Revolution. Revolutions are an important part of the history of the modern era. There are obviously other important revolutions that are not on the present agenda, such as the French Revolution, the Haitian Revolution, the revolutions in Latin America, the Mexican Revolution, the Russian Revolution of 1905, the Chinese Revolution 1949, the Vietnamese Revolution of the 1940s, 50s. So this is one example of a 20th century revolution. In a sense, the 20th century has been a special period for revolutions. 1905 in Russia, 1910 in Mexico, 1911 in China, 1917 in Russia, 1949 in China, 1954 in Vietnam, and many others as well. As we look at the Russian Revolution, we notice a dramatic transformation of society. The Romanovs had been in power in Russia for many years, several centuries, since the 17th century. They now were forced out of power, replaced by a provisional government, which lasted a short period of time, and then was displaced by the Bolsheviks, the communists, under Lenin and Trotsky. As we look at this era of the 20th century, we can look at Eric J. Hobsbawm and his fairly recent book on the short century, 1914 to 1991. Although there was no communist nation in existence at that time, Russia did not become Bolshevik communist until 1917. Virtually the entire period from 1914 to 1991 includes a communist presence and communist importance. It becomes the principal challenger to Western Europe and especially the United States. It becomes a challenger to capitalism. It takes on not only a national character, but an international character, and even a global character through the Third International, which was established in the aftermath of the Bolshevik victory and would remain in power for a number of years until World War II. As we look at the background to the Russian Revolution, we notice that there were some changes that took place in Russia, in the economic sphere, in the political sphere, the early 20th century. There was some liberalization of the political system, although limited, with the Duma and other developments. Some changes in the economic sphere with the Stolypin's reforms, industrialization, cotton textile mills, steel mills, coal mines, oil fields, transportation railroads, Trans-Siberian Railroad. But the development was uneven. Not only was development uneven by region, by economic sphere, it was also uneven, very importantly, in terms of who benefited and who was hurt. There was a growing working class. It worked long hours, often got low wages, experienced bad working conditions and questionable living conditions. This group, along with the peasantry and middle class radicals, become the core group pushing for revolution. In the 1910s, 1912, 1913, there are strikes by miners and others. And then 1914 brings about World War I. World War I is a key to the coming revolutions of 1917. It weakens the Tsarist system, because the Tsarist system doesn't have the productive capacity to produce goods that will meet both the civilian and military needs of the Russian people. It also creates a situation where some groups of individuals, the elite, are still living well, while others are in a situation of dire economic and financial hardship. This will lead in February 1917 to strikes by women, by workers. The key cities of Russia are important battlegrounds for these conflicts. St. Petrograd and Moscow in particular. The Tsar is overthrown, provisional government comes into power. It has a decision to make, several decisions as a matter of fact. It decides to prolong the war. Russia will participate and hope to get territorial and other gains as a result of victory by Britain, France, and eventually the United States, which will enter war in April 1917. It also decides to wait until the Constituent Assembly is in place, which will be in January 1918, before taking any steps in regard to land reform. So you have discontent individuals who want to get Russia out of the war, those who want land for the peasantry, those who want bread and peace for the working class, better working conditions, better living conditions. By itself, these grievances, this discontent, this ferment, this unrest, would not necessarily have brought about a second revolution in 1917, except for a number of factors. One of them is the continuation of the war and the losses that Russia is accruing in territory and death and destruction. Another is the inept leadership of the Tsar, the role of Rasputin, the role of the Soviet, the Russian elite, the gap that's emerging between the people and the power group, those around the Tsar, those who are the landed leadership, those who had the Orthodox Church in Russia. This becomes a key factor as we turn from 1916 to 1917. The shortages increase, the discontent grows, revolution comes, but the revolutionaries, the provisional government of Prince Lvov and then Alexander Kerensky, can't deal with the dynamic, changing situation. And therefore, people are more willing to look around for options to the existing system. It's a period of crisis, period of tension, period of fear, period of insecurity. And the Kerensky government, for example, is moving rather cautiously and slowly at a time when people are demanding rapid, fundamental action. The return of Lenin is the key to what's going on. Lenin comes to the Finland station April 1917. He has a plan. He has support from soldiers and sailors, from workers. He has capable associates, including Leon Trotsky. He has the ability to mobilize forces that will take over Russia and create the Bolshevik Revolution of November 1917. The soldiers and sailors, the workers, are key parts of this new coalition. What happens soon after the Bolsheviks and Lenin come to power is that Treaty of Brest-Litovsk is signed, which Russia pulls out of the war, World War I. Germany makes a number of advantages, territorial and otherwise, population, resources. This antagonizes the allies, including the United States. A civil war will emerge, Russian civil war. Trotsky will be in charge of the Red Army, which is a key factor in the outcome of the conflict. The secret police will be formed. Violence will be increased. Atrocities will be committed by both the Bolsheviks and their opponents. Many of their opponents are conservative, want restoration of the Tsar or a system of authoritarian rule. There are also anarchists, such as Nestor Makhno, who are calling for a society in which the workers and the peasants are blessed with freedom, social justice, land, and employment. This is a time of experiment. You have individuals who are pushing for women's rights, questioning marriage, questioning the family, calling for gender equality. Alexandria Kollontai is one of the key figures. And Ms. Armand is also an important figure. So women's rights is on the agenda in the aftermath of the Bolsheviks taking power. There are also those who say that it is necessary to spread the revolution from Russia to other countries. There are uprisings in Hungary, in Finland, Italy, Germany. Parties are formed in Great Britain, United States, other parts of the world. It seems as though communism is on the move. This is viewed by Woodrow Wilson, by Clemenceau, by Lloyd George, and by the Japanese as being very threatening to the existing world order. These status quo powers opposed the Bolsheviks, the communists. Not only do they oppose them in general terms, but they dispatch armed forces to support the opponents of the Bolsheviks. Even with these additional forces, however, the opponents of the Bolsheviks are unsuccessful and the Bolsheviks retain power. This creates a dilemma for Lenin. War communism was successful in a sense. Bolsheviks remained in power, their opponents were defeated. In other respects, is a threatening situation. Lenin finds himself presiding over a country that's suffering from 7 years of war, death and destruction, insufficient food, insufficient clothing, insufficient housing, an economy that's in the doldrums, an economy that cannot meet the needs of the people of Russia. What is Lenin going to do? What are the Bolsheviks going to do? What are the communists going to do? They are concerned about the force of the left, something that emerges in late 1917 and continues on. The social revolutionaries are more an agrarian group. They represent an important element of Russian society. They're an alternative to the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks go against the social revolutionaries and remove them as a key element of the system of the Soviet Union. Anarchists are also an important element. Anarchism develops in Europe in the 19th century. You have French anarchists such as Pierre Proudhon. You have Italian anarchists such as Enrico Malatesta. You have Russian anarchists such as Michael Bakunin and Peter Kropotkin. You have anarchists in Spain, anarchists in Switzerland, anarchists in the United States, anarchists in Mexico. Anarchism is also a world movement. Bakunin and Marx are in conflict during the First International. Marx is triumphant, but Bakunin displays a strong measure of strength. So the communists are also interested in defeating Makhno and the anarchist impulse. More conflict arises over what happens in Petrograd. The Kronstadt sailors had been a key element in the victory of the Bolsheviks in November 1917. Now they are disappointed with what is happening in the Soviet Union. They indicate their displeasure. Instead of embracing them, as the Bolsheviks had in 1917, leading up to the November Revolution, they're disdained, they're opposed, and they're undermined and destroyed by the Red Army led by Leon Trotsky. This eliminates the opponents of the left, but really doesn't deal with the economic crisis. In this case, Lenin makes a key decision, rather pragmatic decision, opportunistic decision, expedient decision. He needs production of food, needs production of other products necessary to maintain the stability and support of the Russian people. To do this, he introduces NEP, the new economic policy. This is the middle ground. The heights of the economy are still in the control of the state, the Communist Party, Lenin, and other leaders. But there is some measure of land in the hands of small farmers. There's also the opportunity to organize and operate small businesses. This leads to the production of more food. There's more incentive, there's more initiative. And Lenin follows this policy in order to get the economy going again, because there's not sufficient motivation based upon other approaches to economic regeneration. One of the questions that arises is the relationship between Lenin and Stalin. There's no clear answer to that. There are parallels between the two. There are differences between the two. You have them operating in a somewhat different environment. Lenin, in the war communism period, is most likely the closest to the Stalinist approach of any period of his rule over the Soviet Union and over the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. There's more violence there, there's more centralization of power, there's more willingness to deal with their opponents by death and destruction. So we have a country that's partially modernized under the Tsar, Nicholas II. The economy backtracks under Lenin because of continuation of war, because of internal opposition, external opposition. Stalin is faced with the situation, there's no revolution, there's no world revolution, concentrates on developing the Soviet Union, sees it as being encircled by capitalist nations that are desirous of its death and destruction. He says in order to survive as an alternative power, communism, the Soviet Union must undertake a major economic initiative, collectivization of agriculture, replacing private property in agriculture, collective farms, state farms. This will also, according to Stalin, lead to lower food prices, lead to more food production so that the workers can be supplied with the food which they need, release labor from the farms so they can move into factories, mines, transportation, and be the economic proletarian bulwark of the industrialization program of the five-year plans established by Stalin. Stalin says that capitalism suffers from an unplanned economy. He's going to have a planned economy. A governmental agency will plan the economy, decide on the priorities, decide on how resources will be allocated, decide on who will make the decisions and who will operate the economic levers of Soviet society. The outcome of this is twofold. On the one hand, there's the success of the industrialization program, particularly heavy industry, steel, power generation, oil, coal, weaker in consumer goods, and a failure in agriculture. The price is a heavy one. Many people die in collectivization. The secret police operates and sends many people to Siberia. Others are killed. Show trials are held. Purges take place. Millions of people die. On the other hand, one can point out the Soviet Union survives, plays a crucial role in defeating Hitler, Nazi Germany during World War II. It's an alternative that has international implications because there are communist parties and communists in many parts of the world. Some of them are inspired by the desire for power. Some of them are inspired by the desire for a new society, a more democratic society. In the late 1930s, 35 to 39, particularly at the Popular Front, Nazis have come to power in Germany in 33 with Adolf Hitler. They're suppressing their opponents in Germany. They're looking to rearm. They're considering territorial expansion. The Russians are playing a leading role in opposing them, trying to get the support of the United States, Britain, and France, saying that the liberals and socialists and communists can collaborate in an alliance that will transform society in a democratic fashion, benefiting workers and other producers, while at the same time opposing the aggressive and expansionist and militaristic activities of Adolf Hitler and his cohorts in Nazi Germany. What can we say in conclusion? That the Russian Revolution introduces an alternative. The United States becomes the dominant power, economic power, and after World War II, political and military power in the world. It is one approach embodied in the ideas and activities of Woodrow Wilson, and then the ideas and activities of Franklin Delano Roosevelt in particular. Lenin and Stalin also see themselves as being a wave of the future, not only for Russia, but internationally. There's competition between the two systems. There's collaboration and cooperation during World War II, the Grand Alliance. This will break down with the Cold War. So what we have, if we look at the American Revolution, the Industrial Revolution, and the Russian Revolution, are three major fundamental changes in modern society, changes that are supposed to democratize society in political terms in the American Revolution, democratize society in economic terms, particularly in the Industrial Revolution and the Russian Revolution. It'll lead to increased wealth, increased power, increased status. With that increased wealth, power, and status will be divided unequally among regions, among nations, and internally with workers, farmers, women, African Americans, ethnic minorities, religious minorities, often paying the price, and others getting the benefit of this series of monumental, fundamental changes in the modern world. These can be called great. It's the Great American Revolution, the Great Industrial Revolution, and the Great Russian Revolution. These are great in the sense they're important, fundamental, major. We're still living in the aftermath of these changes. They move in two directions, and I'll conclude on that note. You have the direction of the global economy with its benefits and many drawbacks. You have the environmental problems posed by the new societies that are emerging in India and China, and the old societies that operated in the Soviet Union, United States, and the Western world. You have the desire for human rights, expressed in the Declaration of Human Rights of the United Nations, expressed for the United States in FDR in 1944, calling for a new deal that will transform not only the political system of the United States, but give people the right to jobs, housing, health care. Thus, although the American Revolution is in a sense over, the Industrial Revolution seems to be over, and the Russian Revolution seems to be over, each of them leaves a legacy that has multiple parts, and it is important for us to understand these multiple parts and to choose those elements that are most valuable in creating our own version of the good society. Thank you.